Bandwidth and hosting for the British Tech Network is provided by UK2.net. Innovative, affordable, and reliable web hosting.
Happy people. Welcome to another iOS show on the British Tech Network. I'm here as always with my happy, cheery and, Roddy panel for to talk about all things iOS and that kind of jazz. So to start with, the gentleman who made a rather brief appearance, so we're hoping he's going to be here for a bit longer tonight, Mr. Streak, how are you tonight?
Hello. I am quite well. I have my son with me right now, in fact, and I'm hoping he'll be quiet during the duration of this podcast, at least.
Well, we can maybe start some kind of record for the world's youngest podcaster.
I suppose he would be somewhere in that region, yeah. I don't know what Guinness has to say about it, but yeah, quite possible.
And we also have, I was going to go Ian there, but he was away to do something. So I'm going to go on to Roddy now. How are you this evening, Roddy?
I'm riding on a wave of elation, Paul, as always.
That's good to hear.
I don't want to disappoint you. Happy podcasters, and I'm just, I'm a big ball of joy.
That's good to hear. Glad to hear it. And Ian, how are you this evening?
Roddy's cheery face has put me right off my dinner.
It would do that to anyone. I don't blame you. Tonight, we are here to discuss iOS, and we have a bunch of stuff to discuss around iOS tonight. So I'm just going to jump straight on in, and we... I'm going to leave that one till last. That was a little teaser for you, though. So the first thing is, and I'm sure Roddy has a lot to say about this, Sparrow having been bought by Google.
I have absolutely nothing to say about that.
I expected that.
I don't know. Everyone bangs on about Sparrow. I've not really used it myself because, as recorded here, I'm not a Gmail user anymore anyway. I never particularly was. But my partner recently got a MacBook Air, and she's a Gmail user. And I said, oh, you know, if you use Gmail, everyone's going on about this mail client called Sparrow, so you should give it a go. And we installed it, and she hated it. So that came straight off again.
Oh, well.
But yeah, it is interesting that they had... my understanding is they brought out an update to Sparrow, and Google have bought Sparrow. I suppose a little bit like when... I was going to say it's a bit like when Twitter bought the Tweety clients from Lauren Brichter or whatever his name is. So they've kind of now got an official client that they've bought in rather than develop in-house. But from what it looks like, the report's coming in that they've actually now halted development on it. So they've bought it, said thanks, and now it's just going to stay in its current state.
Yeah, that is correct. They've basically said no more updates for this software. We're not doing anything else. We're going to go and work on Gmail now. Annoying for people that like it.
I wouldn't have expected anything less, though, because Gmail doesn't really like doing apps. I mean, they want you to be in the browser. They want you to be in quick and easy access to them at all times. They don't like the whole offline experience. So when I heard this, that it was almost a little bit confusing why people thought that Gmail would maybe brand it up differently. I mean, I can't see any evidence to suggest that they would have done.
Well, there's a question for me is, if they built Sparrow in the first place, was it because they wanted a desktop email client or just because they weren't satisfied with the Gmail experience? Because if it was that they weren't satisfied, then this makes complete sense. They can go and they can make Gmail better. But if they actually wanted like a desktop client, a bit more flexible than a web client in a lot of ways, it seems more like they're selling out. Like, you know, we were going to build this desktop client, but now, you know, we've been offered a ton of money. We don't want to anymore. And to be fair, you know, there's not a lot of money in email clients these days. It's not like the golden halcyon days of Eudora and things like that. But, you know, they had quite a good thing going, and they just didn't seem to have built the right kind of business around it, I guess.
Yeah. So do you think it was the sale was for the UX talent? I somewhat disagree with this, but the Sparrow client for the Mac and iOS are hailed as being these user experience masterpieces. Now, I strongly disagree, but... do you think that's maybe what it was? Because Gmail isn't exactly known for their forward-thinking user experience teams.
It looked like somebody had tried to cram a mail client into a Twitter client and sort of stopped bothering halfway through.
That's kind of what I was going to say, actually. It looks, to me, in a way, a lot like they drew the inspiration of the official Twitter client and like built a mail application around that concept and that thinking.
Yeah,
and they didn't really do too much more with it. I'm sure it was fine on iOS. I never bothered, really, because I'm quite happy with the built-in client. But I know, I can understand the people who are upset and somewhat sad about the app disappearing, especially those who paid for it, like, what, 1 week ago when they had it on sale?
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
How convenient they had it on sale. This is the last money we're going to get out of this.
I don't think it's good for anybody, though, because, you know, I'm sure Google has UX people, but you don't really see much evidence of their existence.
No. No, you don't.
Especially lately.
No. So if I was I am a user of Spire on the desktop, not on the iPhone, what am I going to do now? I mean, I know that they're not exactly going to pull the rug from under us so we can continue to use it, but it's only going to get kind of major bug fixes and things like that. So is there another tool out there? And if so, what is it? And should I be using it, or should I just go back to good old Mail on my Mac?
I have just the thing for you, Paul. It's called iCloud.
Ah, yes, indeed.
Well done, Ian.
That's not considered a serious suggestion, though. That should be an issue for Apple, really. We don't consider iCloud a serious email platform. Sorry, Apple.
To be fair, I mean, the iOS and OS X mail clients support Gmail pretty well now. From my limited experience, they seem to be okay with it now.
I'm sure they possibly are. I just quite like that separation because I use my Me account for my kind of more personal stuff, so just kind of email between friends and things like that. And my Gmail account is much more for my work and kind of organising the podcast and things like that. So I quite like them being in separate applications. Now, I know I can have separate inboxes and things like that, but I'm quite weird and OCD, and I like inbox zero. And I would find myself getting distracted by the fact I had 15,000 emails in from Twitter or Facebook or Foursquare telling me some nonsense I didn't care about when I should actually be getting on with my work. So I quite like that separation of the two different applications.
Yeah, go and do some work.
It wasn't really the response I was hoping for there. I was hoping for a suggestion, but thanks all the same.
My pleasure.
I don't know, there just aren't very many interesting mail clients out there these days. You know, there aren't very many options on iOS in any case because of the historic kind of you may not do something that does something that Apple already do rule, which is very loosely applied these days, it seems, with the plethora of new browsers and email clients and things. I don't know. I think it's just perhaps a reflection on the fact that people are using email less these days. There are other things that fill a lot of those gaps.
Yep. So, anyway, moving on to the Apple earnings report that came out last week. So the Apple report came out for its third quarter results. And, you know, I read this this next bit on Forbes website. Tonight, Apple reported a disappointing quarter by missing expectations on most metrics. Revenues, EPS, iPhone units, iMac units, gross margin, next quarter guidance were lower than anticipated, and the stock traded down at roughly 5% after market. I think this is ridiculous when you consider that this company delivered $35 billion in that quarter and people are going, oh, shh.
And more importantly, I mean, they were almost on target, from what I believe, to their own figures. So Apple made what they thought they were going to make. It's just what all the analysts thought that they were going to make that they didn't hit.
Yeah.
I only have one thing to say about that. I would love to have that kind of disappointment in my bank account.
Yes, exactly.
So that's kind of, if Apple, it, you know, later this year, instead of bringing out another iPhone, all the analysts are going, oh, they're going to bring out the moon on a stick, and then they don't bring out the moon on the stick, and they bring out another iPhone, and they go, oh, it's disappointing product release from Apple.
Precisely how it usually goes, I would say. I mean, the analysts dream up almost anything, and like you said, the moon on a stick, they think this coming, and, well, it's just another iPhone.
Why can't they just shut up? Can we not have them all killed or something?
Here's the thing, right? In almost every quarter over the last 2 or 3 years, Apple has beaten its own estimate by somewhere between about 15 and 20%. So it's been very, very, very consistent. And Wall Street has kind of lowballed it because they expect people to kind of beat their estimates by a maximum of about 10%. So the question is, you know, it's not the first time that they've had a new model in the wings that people are expecting. It's not the first time that people have been kind of holding back and not buying their stuff, perhaps, which is how they explain the low figures. So it suggests that there's something else going on at Apple that they weren't expecting, that there's something has happened that they couldn't predict. Because usually, you know, there was a very good piece on this that I read by Jean-Louis Gasset, who used to be head of Apple Europe. He blogs at a place called Monday Notes. We'll put it in the show notes. And he kind of picked up a few kind of bits from other blogs and said, you know, it's the first time they've really kind of come down to that level. So the question is, what didn't they know about this quarter and it's this quarter's results, and why didn't they know it? They're only, what is it, 3% over what they expected to be over, and most of the time they would estimate at least, you know, they give themselves maybe a 10% margin for poor performance. So you've got to figure that they're under their own expected performance at that point.
But are they under their own expected performance, being that they are bang on their performance? Is it not the other way around? That
bang on their guidance, that's not the same as how well they expect to do. If you're sensible, if you're telling Wall Street, this is how well we think we're going to do, you're not going to tell them exactly how well you think you're going to do. You're going to put in 5-10% margin. So if you don't quite hit your numbers, you'll still look okay. And if you beat your numbers, you'll look fantastic. And that has been the history with Apple. They've been more than 10% over their guidance since quarter four of 2009. The last time they haven't been this close to their guidance since quarter two of 2009.
Ian, I don't know why you didn't become an accountant. I really don't.
Well, it sounds like he's done some research. Sorry, Ian, you've obviously kind of wandered into the wrong podcast here. We don't do any research here. This is just kind of gut feeling and instinct.
I know, but I like the analysis stuff. First one I was on, I said, go and read a Simcoe. It's interesting. And this is the same kind of stuff. So I've put the link in the show notes there.
Thank you very much. I see what your point is. But, I mean, eventually they kind of had to start almost plateauing, and by no means are they plateauing in the sense that 26 million iPhones sold this quarter, which is a 28% unit growth, and iPads is up 84% year on year. But is it possible that they are just, it's not that they didn't see it, they saw it coming, but it has started to plateau? I mean, other players are coming in the market that are having increasingly more, you know, it's no longer a case of, I want an iPad, oh, I can't afford it, I'm going to go and get this device. For example, the Nexus 7, it's actually starting to look like, not that it's going to beat the iPad, it's not an iPad killer by any means, I hate that phrase, but it is starting to kind of get into that space where you maybe have two in the market. And so the iPad growth and the Apple growth is kind of starting to plateau.
Well, there's also the thing that Samsung had a blockbuster quarter. So Apple's record for iPhone shipped in a quarter is, I think, 37 million, which was the holiday quarter last year. This quarter, they sold 26 million, which is a bit down on that. Samsung sold 50.5 million smartphones and nearly 100 million phones overall. So they have really sold a lot of phones in comparison to Apple there.
Yeah,
trying so hard not to say anything about quality versus quantity.
Yeah.
But I've said it. There you go.
Yeah, I think there's a fair point there, because I would really be interested. You take that massive number, and that number is relevant because it is the amount of phones they've sold, obviously, which means that that's the amount of money they've made and that's their business. But how many of those phones sold are to people who actually know that they have a smartphone? Or are they just to somebody that's wandered into a shop and they've been shown two phones, they really don't know the difference, they both look kind of like iPhones, they've heard that the iPhone is the big thing, and this one was cheaper, so I went with that one, and that one happened to be an Android phone.
I think quite often this is borne out by the you know, the internet usage statistics that you get for kind of iOS versus Android. Yeah. The iOS take up actual usage of you know, sort of broadband or Wi-Fi it is higher than an Android generally, by quite a bit as well, from what I recall.
Yeah, I heard those stats on another podcast earlier on this week, oddly. And it was significantly more. And I suppose it's the after-sale revenue as well, because, and I'm going to wildly stab at this number because I don't have it in front of me, but the amount of apps downloaded on Android versus iPhone, as in iPhone being higher, or iOS generally, was something like 10%. So sure, they're maybe making more phones and they're selling more phones, but everybody's just browsing the web and downloading the free applications on the Android devices, whereas people are actually spending money in the App Store, which kind of keeps that ecosystem alive.
Yeah, it's interesting, but I think 50 million phones for Samsung in a quarter is, you know, quite an interesting stat in itself.
Yes.
But I'll be interested to see what the figures are like 3 months hence.
It is.
By which time, hopefully, we'll know more about whatever is coming out.
Indeed, I'm trying to look for a news story that's actually going to make this podcast a little bit more amusing, being that we've gotten quite serious all of a sudden. That was all very numbery. It's not like us.
I blame Ian.
Yes. Let's see if we can get something good out of this one. Windows malware is found in the iOS app in the app. Sorry, in an iOS app in the App Store.
That's hilarious, Paul.
So a Windows malware worm has been found embedded in an application being distributed in Apple's App Store for iOS. The worm is a relatively low-threat malware package that will not affect the iOS or Mac OS platform, but will be harmful to those who manage their iTunes accounts on a Windows machine, which I say, it's your own fault, really.
Do you think Apple put it in their own purpose? I noticed that they've, they're quietly seem to be dropping Safari for Windows, because they've got Safari 5 is still available for download for Windows, but it's hidden, whereas Safari 6 for Windows hasn't turned up. So maybe they're trying to scale down the size of their Windows software operations while simultaneously actively killing it with malware.
I see. My take on this is, you've all heard the analogy of you give a million monkeys a typewriter and see how long they take to come up with the works of Shakespeare. If you give them all like a keyboard and a compiler, I reckon they'd have like four different kinds of Windows malware inside a day. No problem.
But I mean, if they presumably they're all testing their apps and everything like that on Mac machines, I would imagine. It's very highly unlikely that the panel of people who check apps is what running Windows machines. So really, why would this have popped up? I can't see a scenario in which this was actually found.
Neither can I. It's sort of bewildering, isn't it? I suppose it reminds me in a way, I don't know how much of a parallel this really is, but, I would often have make sure my emails were virus scanned, even though I'm using a Mac, because I might receive something that I pass on somebody who has a Windows computer that then infects them. So I'm just being responsible. It sort of reminds me of that in a roundabout way, that you can have an operating system that you're using that's not party to that infection or being compromised by that malware. But if you're good, then you have a responsibility to stop passing that on as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, it's quite a neat delivery mechanism. If you get somebody to sync their iPhone with their Windows PC and iTunes, all of a sudden you've got your malware onto their computer and through a channel that they wouldn't have expected, because, as you say, it's not something Apple are going to be looking out for, because they're concerned about things that are doing bad stuff on the phone rather than bad stuff on people's Windows computers.
I wonder if it's another clever attempt to switch the lights off in Tehran. You never know.
Oh, dear. We've also got some, in the show notes here, we've got new iPhone prototypes, but so these are the ones that have been, we're looking at a next gen, and we also have The Verge have also released some new ones as well, although we don't have the link to that in the show notes. I'm sorry, we'll pop that in the show notes. It's much of a muchness, isn't it? It's just the same. What's new about these photographs that we're now seeing, other than the fact there's more of them?
The prototype photographs,
yeah,
rather than the leak photographs of the next phone.
Yes.
I thought it was quite interesting that the some of the earlier prototypes were very Sony inspired, up to the point of having the Sony logo, but with J-O-N-Y, like Johnny Ive. I thought it was rather neat.
I really like that. It was great.
There were some, with hindsight, I suppose we are a few years down the line, and the iPhone did, in its final incarnation, change the way we look at smartphone design. But some of them, the designs are pretty bloody awful. I mean, they were really kind of ripping off the pre-Sony Ericsson Sony look, which could go one of both ways, either kind of reasonably pleasant or hideous.
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting because you can see a lot of the iPhones we've seen in all the prototypes. So the question is there anything in these prototypes they've released that may give us a hint about what future iPhones might look like or do?
Well, there was certainly one that was a spitting image of the iPhone 4 and iPhone 4S, I suppose. And they'd obviously thought that the design was worth pursuing to prototype stage, but then put it on the back burner. It's interesting that not very many of them actually look like the 3G or 3GS.
Yeah, there's a couple that have got some really weird corners as well, which I thought was a really interesting design choice. So they kind of got like squared off corners to kind of make them look like, hexagons at the bottom.
Oh, they were horrible.
Yeah.
Star Galactica phone.
Yes, they did look like something out of some kind of sci-fi movie, yeah. I don't know. There's a lot of traction about this. I mean, it's kind of interesting to look back and stuff and kind of go, groovy. But Is that all this is? I mean, I don't really see anything that we can kind of look forward to this.
I want to see a version of the original iPad prototype coming out. That was amazing. It's about an inch thick. It looked like an iBook that just had the keyboard ripped off it and turned back to front. That thing must have weighed about a ton. That'd be great. Just go, hey everyone, look what I've got, pulling that out your bag, which would have to be an enormous hold all. You might need to get a forklift to take it out as well.
But what it does interest me to a degree, albeit I think it's more of the same, is the Engadget next-gen iPhone parts leaked again. And then there's kind of a video of somebody holding the back and then putting a screen on it and then kind of mimicking a movement on front of it.
There can be no doubt now that's the next iPhone.
I'm fairly sure it is. I was thinking, other than the one that got leaked in a bar last year.
Sounds painful.
Have we seen this level of leaks before an iPhone release before? Just seems to be an awful lot, and they're fairly high fidelity as well.
I wonder if for some strategic reason to do with, I think we sort of briefly mentioned this before, to do with the whole Samsung suit, if maybe they're trying to get letting this get out beforehand. Do they really need to surprise us with something that looks completely different? I think it's more the little features now, evolutionary features that make the phone stand out rather than exactly what shape it is or...
Yeah, no, I quite like it, actually. I'm not sure I'm convinced by the headphone jack being at the bottom, to be honest, but otherwise I think it's quite a nice design. I quite like that brushed metal across the back.
I'm secretly hoping this is, in fact, Tim Cook preparing the world's greatest troll.
Well, that would be awesome in a way.
Well, that's the alternative idea, isn't it? That maybe they're just deliberately leaking these parts out left, right, and centre so you can go, aha.
Well, I did think it was interesting that he talked about doubling down on security, which kind of went completely against that, because I feel, I might be wrong here, but I feel like we've had more leaks from this iPhone than we've ever had before, which kind of goes against his doubling down on security.
Well, that's true, but he's doubling down on security on the Apple side, and he has less control over the suppliers. And the word is that nothing, but nothing, has leaked out of Apple itself. And all the leaks have come from suppliers. And it may be because the leaks in Apple are that much rarer these days that the suppliers are leaking more because, you know, but I don't know, it may be part of the long game, and maybe they know exactly where each leak is coming from, and then, you know, they're sending their agents in black turtlenecks out to sort things out.
And we'll never hear from them ever again.
Well, we may hear from them when they turn up holding the iPhone 5 on September the 21st, apparently.
Which iPhone, Paul? Just remind me which iPhone that is.
iPhone 6. All right, it's going to be the new iPhone, I believe.
That's better.
Yes.
Yep.
So yeah, the new iPhone.
Could we not just call it 6th generation and be done with it?
Okay, the 6th generation iPhone. Apparently, there's an event...
Hang on, let me get this. Let me get it. 6th. Okay,
sixth.
Carry on.
Something like that.
Ian, do you want to talk about something? You're worrying me. It's a bit of the podcast where Ian raises up on his hindquarters and starts hissing down the microphone.
Actually, Roddy, I'm going to eat my snack now.
Is it a locust?
No, it's not. It is crunchy like a locust, but it is not a locust.
You just waltz in halfway through the podcast and try and steal the eating snacks mid-podcast crown from me, don't you?
Well, if you want to eat your snack now, Roddy, you
I've
be my guest.
I've got a coffee crisp here, and I'm not afraid to use it.
This is a double
right,
decker.
Hang on, I've got mine. Right.
Okay, gentlemen, do you mind? I'm really sorry to kind of get in the way here, but do you want to talk about some iOS news?
Oh, go on.
So, iMore are reporting that Apple iPhone 5 and iPad mini event is planned for September the 12th. The iPhone 5, which we're calling 6th generation, release date for September the 21st, the following Friday. What's our thoughts here? I have not seen anything. It's all fair and well, this report, but I've not seen anything, which normally happens first, is talking about somebody booking the Moscone Center. And this report kind of talks about, yeah, it's going to happen on that date and stuff like that, but I've seen nothing saying, which we've seen in the past, that you know, some guy in shades and a high collar and a hat covering his face wandered into the Moscone Center and signed a booking form, or is anybody else?
It doesn't particularly surprise me, the timing, because absolutely September, October has always been the, you know, the iPod, iTunes, and now, of course, aligned with the iPhone release schedule. Mm-hmm. So September, October, fine. September the 12th, good a date as any. But as you say, yeah, until we... Never believe it until you see the banners going up.
Yeah, yeah.
In fact, Intel have the Moscone Center booked out on September the 12th.
And how do you have the booking form?
How do you know this, Ian?
You can go to moscone.com and it tells you what events are on.
Really? That's so wonderfully obvious. I didn't know
that. This is people have done this before. You know, when people have been trying to work out what weekend WWDC is going to be on, they've gone to like the venue facility and they've tried to work out which weekends are not booked and gone, right, it might be that one or it might be that one. So I've got to keep them free until they announce it, kind of thing.
Historically, over the last couple of years, have the September, October iPod, iPhone, what do you call them? The things where all the people sit in the room.
Keynote.
The thing. Keynote. Well, yeah, the keynote, shall we say. Have they been at the Moscone Center? Have they been at the Apple Town Hall thing?
No, I'm fairly sure.
The Town Halls.
No, I'm sure they've all been at the Moscone Center.
Well, you only hire Moscone if you want to have lots of people in. So they hire Moscone for like WWDC, but if they just want to get the press in and announce something, they can do that in a town hall, no problem.
So what we need to do is find out Apple's own internal booking system.
Yeah, that doesn't seem too hard.
Yes. How hard can it be? Should we just phone them tomorrow and ask them? Say that we'd like to book the town hall September the 12th for a sexy party and see what they say.
Ah, dearie me. Right, well, we could try that. So if you get on that, and we'll report back how we got on at the next on the next show.
I probably will then.
Good, good. Now, finally, the next piece of rumour is somewhat underwhelming, so that's why I've left at the end almost as a bit of a... is that the new iPhone to debut with AirDrop. Is everybody excited about this feature?
Sort of, although I don't think I've actually used AirDrop with a Mac yet, so...
See, I've used it twice, and on both occasions, it did not work. So, oh. I've never used it again.
I've used it twice, and on both occasions, it worked just fine. So,
well, there you
Nina,
go.
I'm just confused, because, you know, if you want to drop something onto your phone, surely you want to drop it there for something to use it, so... Mm. The iPhone doesn't have a file system. It's all sandboxed. Yep. Is it like, well, you can drop files into any application? Is it you can drop files into your photo library? What does it do?
It'd be great for flipping photographs and stuff across and contacts, whatever. Maybe it's just very limited. Maybe it's meant to do the same things as, say, Bump does, but using their own proprietary AirDroppiness.
Possibly. But, somewhat underwhelming. So with that...
It would be much easier to get... I mean, if it works, it's by far the easiest way to get a file from A to B, but it's just a question of what they build around that, what APIs and things, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. Cool. Okay. And with that, we move on swiftly into the wonder that is the Trouble Gusset section. So our first request comes in tonight from Gary Forbes. And he asks... Does someone know if my iPad backs up to my Mac over Wi-Fi? Sometimes when I'm using my Mac, my wife's iPad appears to be connected in iTunes and syncing when it is in the kitchen. And I think we can safely assume, by the way that's worded, that the kitchen is not the room where the Mac is.
I think you'd be safe in assuming that from the way it's been written. Pretty much.
So, does that happen?
Yes, it does.
Ah.
Although, I'm just trying to remember where it is in the... If you go into iTunes and you have your iDevices in the left-hand pane, so you've got device I've got on my Roddy's iPad, Roddy's iPhone, if you select your device, click Summary, and then at the bottom where it says Options, it does have a sync with this iPad, iPhone, whatever, over Wi-Fi. So it will do it while you're in the house. And I usually do that because I quite often just leave my... Because the iPad... just has so much charge in it, so much capacity. I leave it in my bag most of the time and don't even bother charging it when I'm at home. So it's just happily synchronizing while it's still sitting in my bag, and then I go out the next day.
It doesn't synchronize when it's not plugged in.
Oh, well, it must do. Sorry. What I mean is it's not plugged into the my iMac.
If it's plugged into the power, it's fine, but it must be connected to power before it syncs.
That's absolutely right. And so, yeah, and it syncs away quite happily.
Here we go. That's the answer to that question. Great.
I'm sure my iPhone's synced when it's not been plugged in.
Well, it shouldn't have.
Well, that's interesting. Okay.
You can also see it from the other side. If you go into Settings General, there's a thing called iTunes Wi-Fi Sync, and it'll say, I don't have Wi-Fi on my laptop just now, so it's saying it will resume when the laptop is available. Cool. Although it probably means when the laptop is available and when the phone is plugged in, but hey.
Interesting.
Okay. That's your question answered there, Gary. I hope that has satisfied you for this evening. The next question is from Craig Gardner. I have heard rumours of a smaller plug on the new iPhone. Do you know if this will still be compatible with my in-car dock? I have a Volkswagen Golf 2009.
How long is a piece of string?
good reliable cars, though, the Golf. Good fuel economy.
Well, I have heard a rumour that Apple is going to do its very favourite thing and release an adapter.
That's crazy talk.
Mm-hmm. They've never done that
ever,
before.
When have they ever done that before? It's like when they brought out that MagSafe 2 recently. And oh, no, but they did, didn't they? Oh, they do bring out adapters.
Yeah, actually.
Adapters left, right, and centre.
The problem is, though, in my car, my iPhone dock in my car, it actually clips on over the top. So if you pop an adapter in there, it's not going to fit. So it may work. From the technological sense, as in the plug is still going to work, but I'll be kind of dangling around. It'll not be logged in. It'll locked in position, and I have a Seat, so there's every chance it uses the same dock connectors. Volkswagen being the same family of vehicles.
And of course, then you've got all the. I suppose it's not just for things that you plug your iDevice into, you know, like your docks and whatever. But I'm just thinking, what about the camera kit for the iPads and? Mm-hmm. Then that's all going to... Oh, man. I'm sure they will have an adapter, and I'm sure it will be very slimlined, but still.
Yeah, I think that's going to
They can't make it
problem.
Too slim, really. I mean, they still have to have some kind of distance.
I guess plugging things into your iPad isn't the problem. It's the other way around, where you actually have a molded cradle. And they did have a lot of that. You talk about adapters, Ian, when, you know, in the iPod age, there were so many different iPods, and you would have those little kind of plasticky rubber... You got the universal dock, and it all had the little gussets, as they were, to fit in. What's the word?
Gasket.
Little adaptating sheaths that you would place the universal dock before you plugged your iPod in.
Mm. Cool. So the answer to that question is, if you have the same dock in your car as I have in my car, possibly not. However, if you have one that doesn't lock in at the top, there's every chance that there might be an adapter. But I suppose the short and simple answer is we really don't know till it gets released. But you are probably fine for the time being until you get a new phone.
I wonder as well. It will probably go either one of two ways. It's quite likely that the first generation of devices that have the new different port, that they will include the adapter for that generation only.
Mm-hmm.
And then not for the others. But then, of course, it'll be really cheap if you buy it separately. It'll be, what, £35?
Yeah. Moving on. So thank you, Craig. I hope that kind of answered your question as best we can. So the next one comes in from Peter Milligan. I have an iPhone 3GS, which is regularly running out of battery. I've been plugging it into my laptop at work to charge during the day, which is fine. But I recently bought a second-hand iPad 1, which I sometimes need to charge during the day. So I plug it into my work's laptop. The symbol for charging seems to change, but it says not charging. Is this because I have an HP Windows laptop at work? If I plug into a Mac, would it work? If so, I think this is ridiculous. Love the show, guys. However, I think Streak Machine needs to talk more.
I think Streak Machine should talk answer more. This. Go on, keep talking, Streak.
Okay. It is part of the USB specification, unless I remember wrong, that it's 5 volts and 500 milliamps. That it can pump out, and sadly the iPads just need more power than that.
Yep.
Which is right, but then if it can be, if it says it's not charging and you've got the screen on, it may be that when you lock it so the screen's off, it then is in the charging state, because mine does that with a few things I've plugged it into with USB, that absolutely the not charging thing, it's on the screen, it's using power just to sit there. As soon as you lock the screen, it does start charging.
See, that's not been my experience of that as well. I was under the impression that you had to plug it into the mains. So I would side with Streak on this one to say that you have to plug your iPad into the mains for it to get it to charge. I don't think it will work on USB.
I've topped mine up from my laptop before. But I think some laptops are clever. Some laptops will actually put out more power through the USB if they're plugged in than if they're not. Absolutely. And not every USB port is the same. Some USB ports put out more than 500 milliamps. They're actually, because things like hard disks can run off USB, so they like to be safe and they can put out like up to an amp or whatever. So it depends on the laptop sometimes as well.
So, but in the main though, you should be plugging into the port on your laptop that has the little power sign beside it. So usually with these laptops as well, you get four or plus USB ports, and one of them will generally have a little kind of power icon beside it. And as I understand it, I don't know a huge amount about hardware, I have to say, but as I understand it, that one in particular has an extra power going to it or something. It certainly works better than the ones that don't. I'm sure Ian's going to jump in here and correct me though.
Nope.
Just leaping in there.
No, is that right? Yeah, the power thing? Because that's based purely on trial and error. That's been my experience. The little one with the electric bolt beside it works better.
I've seen it mentioned on quite a few Apple laptops saying that the one of the ports does provide more power on specific models.
Yeah. Is the electric bolt not a Thunderbolt icon bolt?
No. Because I'm going back a wee while, and in fact, I don't think you can get Thunderbolt on Windows laptops, so no.
Oh, no, but I wasn't sure which laptop you're on. It depends. Some of them do market, and they generally there is one port that is set up to be more powerful than the rest, but they don't always tell you which one it is.
Cool. So hopefully that's answered your question, Peter, and we will be sure to keep on prodding Street Machine to make sure he's awake and continues to talk. So... I'll try
to sedate my kid and then I can definitely talk a lot more.
On to the next one from Sean O'Brien. I recently discovered that you can answer your iPhone by squeezing the microphone on the cable. Do you know if there is a website or something that tells me all the hidden shortcuts like this on my iPhone?
I think it probably says this on the Apple support site, actually, because there are... I knew that I could answer the phone by clicking the button on the iPhone headset cable, but I then discovered something really weird was happening when I was pressing it and I was listening to my music, and I didn't realize at first that you can actually control, you know, the next track, previous track, and pausing with it as well. And I did look it up, and I did find it on the Apple support site, but I'd have to look it up again. But we can put that in the show notes. Yep. I'm sure it's there.
Yep. I actually had a funny thing the other day with my music. I climbed off the train at Haymarket and realised that my iPad had been blaring out a playlist.
I've done that as well.
But I'd had my headphones in my iPhone, so I had absolutely no idea what was going on. And I'm standing in the queue waiting to get through the barriers at Haymarket, and I kept on putting the volume down on my iPad, and it kept going back up again. I could not work out what was going on. And I'm thinking, I'm just going to have to deal with all day with my iPad sitting playing. At no point did it occur to me to switch my iPad off, I should say. And it turned out what it was I carry a Bluetooth keyboard in my bag. And the Bluetooth keyboard obviously was pressing on the volume up and the play button.
That one's bitten me before.
So I'm going to have to try and remember to switch Bluetooth off at all times unless I'm using it. So anyway, that was a side fun story. Yes, Sean, we'll put something in the show notes if we can find that link. But yes, there are other shortcuts, and there are many other shortcuts on your phone as well, in fact.
Yeah, so you can double click to go to the next track if you're playing. You can do triple click to go to the previous one. It's on page 33 of the iPhone manual on the Apple website, and you can also use the center button, I think, to take a photo if you want to kind of prop your phone in camera mode on something and not touch it when you take the photo. You can use the headphones to do that as well.
Oh, I heard about that. Yeah, I've never tried that, but yeah. Cool. So we'll put some links in if we can find them with some groovy shortcuts there. And finally, in the Trouble Gusset section this evening, this one is from Paul Simpson. I run a podcast and I was wondering how you check for reviews in iTunes stores out with your country. I know the answer to this one, but I'm going to open out to the crowd first.
Well, thankfully, the British Tech Network pays for us to fly over to foreign countries, pays for drinks and expensive entertainment, often in the form of ladies. And we go to the four corners of the earth, and all we do is just get someone to log into iTunes, have a quick look, and we write it down in a notebook. It's exactly what happens.
Paper, might I add.
Yeah, yeah, it's old school.
And then we fax it back.
Yeah, naturally.
Okay.
That's not really the answer.
Okay. Can I do it?
No, go on.
Okay.
Go on.
Well, there's two ways you could do it. The first way was the way that I did it up until this afternoon, coincidentally. And then somebody emailed me a link asking if I was on a particular podcast. And he emailed me the link to it, and it opened up in a browser, and I realized that I can change it. So first, the way that I used to do it, which isn't the simplest way, but is one way. When you're in iTunes, and you can't do this on your iOS devices, you have to do it on the Mac, and I'm assuming on the PC, but I've never tried it. You open up the iTunes store, scroll down the bottom of the page, and you'll see a little circular icon in the bottom right-hand corner with a British flag on it, or whatever your native country iTunes is. If you click on that flag, you can then change the country that your iTunes is attached to. So you can then change it to whatever you want, America or wherever you want. And then it goes back to the homepage of the American iTunes store. You can then search for your podcast in there, and it will show you the local listings. It'll show you all your chart positions and everything like that, and it'll also show you your reviews. Now, that's one way you can do it, but it's quite long-winded. The other way you can do it is all of the podcasts and everything like that are actually available on the Apple website. So in the same way that you can search for apps by, generally the way it works is I would search for going to Google and pop in the app name and then put iTunes after it, and I'll actually show you the link to iTunes. That works for podcasts as well. And the URL string is actually really easy to tweak. So for example, this show, if I just search in Google for the iOS show iTunes, and there we are. And so the URL is itunes.apple.com/gb/podcast/the-ios-show. And that shows you all of our reviews and stuff like that, which unfortunately still is dominated by people telling us that the sound quality is crap, which hopefully we've fixed that. But if you then change GB to US, that then gives you our page in the US App Store. And that's quite a quick and easy way for to flip about them. I don't actually know the extensions for all the other countries. That's the only two I know is GB and US. I'm assuming Canada would be CA.
What's it Azerbaijan?
AZ, I would have assumed.
You would assume
I was going
that,
to say that.
I'm going to look it up now. It I is. Bet we're really popular over there.
So that's a quick and easy way for checking out your reviews in all the different iTunes stores. While we're in here, can I just ask, could somebody give us a new review? Because I'm kind of hoping our sound quality is significantly better than that first episode. So new reviews that kind of suggest that we've no longer got poor sound quality would be lovely. Thank you very much. So that is all for the Trouble Gusset section tonight, unless anybody has anything else they'd like to chuck in.
Nothing being chucked into the gusset tonight, by the looks of it.
Nope.
Awesome. So this podcast and all the others in the British Tech Network would not be possible without UK2.net. They support the British Tech Network and kept us around for over 3 years now. And they're brilliant. And frankly, you should use them. You should use them now. We have a whole pile of voucher codes for various discounts and services from UK2. So if you head over to thebritishtechnetwork.com, click on sponsors, you'll see a list of all of the voucher codes in there. Click on the link at the bottom of that page, which is to UK2. Fill your basket with all you need. Add in all of those discount codes. Now, it should be noted that don't put in your payment details until you've added all those discount codes. And then once you've added all those discount codes, pop in your payment details, and then process your order, and then you'll get all that awesome money off. The other cool thing is if you could just head on over to thebritishtechnetwork.com and then click on the UK2 link to go to your account as well, because then we get the kudos from UK2 for sending you there. So there you go, that's UK2, they support British Tech, and you should support them. Gentlemen, do we have any picks this evening? I will start with... Oh, actually, do you want to try this new section? Because we're running a bit short tonight.
Yeah, let's try the new section.
The new section, right, okay.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, so this is a little bit off the cuff here, so apologies if this crashes and burns in a
horrible...
We're
playing fast and loose, man.
Felt wild and unstoppable tonight.
Breaking all the rules.
So we thought it would be cool to add a section in that's about apps that we'd like to see built. So it could be that I suppose the idea of this section would be ideas for developers to go in and build apps specifically for us, or alternatively, if you could email us in to tell us if these apps exist so we can buy them. That would be awesome. Either way, I don't mind. So first and foremost, Streak, or Robert, as you've listed yourself here, what is your app that you would like to see built?
I would really love to see some kind of a podcast studio app for iOS. I mean, this is an iOS show, so I would really love to do it, like to make the whole show on an iOS device. That would be outstandingly awesome.
It would be.
And unless I remember wrong, Skype, as an example, it does have an API that you can hook into and connect it to your own app and so on and so forth. So theoretically, you would be able to have all the people dial in to a given, do a multipart like we're doing now, and record it on the device, and then afterwards be able to edit it. But I'll take even just the recording part, and that'll make me happy enough almost.
It's interesting you mentioned that, Robert, because I thought I was going to have to do one of these a while back. Oh, it was when you were doing the Bash, and I was going to be at that music festival, and I was looking at ways I could potentially join the podcast and record it while I was away. I don't have a laptop, and I Googled for ways to do it on an iPad, and there is, I've forgotten the name of it, I'm afraid, but there is an audio application that, because it runs properly in the background, you can fire up Skype and record it. It is two different apps. You have Skype and the audio app separately, but it is doable. As long as the audio recording thing you're using does have proper background functionality. So it's not a million miles away.
Yeah.
We're getting closer. Cool.
It's the kind of thing that, maybe they wouldn't. I was going to say it's the kind of thing that Apple would maybe produce, because they produced iMovie for iOS and we've got iPhoto for iOS. So it's almost, could it be Logic for iOS at some point, which does a similar thing and hooks into FaceTime, for example?
No, or even hook it up into GarageBand. That would be pretty okay too.
Oh, that's true. They have GarageBand, and I was forgetting they had GarageBand on iOS.
I think the article I read said that doesn't record in the background, though. So as soon as you flip to Skype, it goes. And that was the problem.
Okay. So if somebody out there can remember the name of the app that Roddy suggested there, Street can have a little play with it and come back and tell us if that works.
I would be ecstatic.
Awesome. Next one, Roddy, what's yours?
I've forgotten.
Show notes it says anything with Find My Friends integration.
Yeah, I thought my idea was just anything that had Find My Friends integration. I think where I'm going with this is that for all the games that now tie into Game Center, I mean, I know that Game Center is a little bit of a mess with that kind of blackjack table look, whatever it's meant to be. And also it's the fact you can only add one friend at a time, which is infuriating, as far as I can see anyway. But I like the way that, Game Center does plug into games. The API is open to third-party games. You can have all your high scores. You can sort of challenge your friends, as it were. And I just thought it would be nice if they, as far as I know, they haven't, but open up the Find My Friends API to everyone so that you could have... Maybe I'm sure Facebook wouldn't be too happy about that, but if Facebook could tie into it so you could see your Facebook friends on Find My Friends and that kind of thing. I'm sure some third-party developers would do very cool things with it, but it just seems odd they've not opened it up.
Yeah,
they let you stalk your pals, but they don't let you use other apps to stalk your pals in more effective ways.
But does anybody actually use Find My Friends? I mean, I have to admit that I installed the app when it first came out, and I think actually, Roddy, I think you were the only person that I linked up with on there. We then commented on how close our offices were, and I don't think I've opened the app since that afternoon.
I think I suggested we were so close we could have gone dancing that night. And nobody would know. I actually use it all the time. I think it's very helpful with my partner was in Glasgow, I live in Edinburgh. You commute. Oh. A lot, and of course, if you are driving, your partner's driving, and they can't answer the phone or answer a text saying when are you going to get here. So if you can plunk that up and see how far along the motorway they are, if you can put your food on or if that kind of thing is quite helpful. Also, I've been out with now that at least one of my kids has got it as well. It's quite helpful for that too, so you can see where your little darlings are.
I have a feeling that this might be more of an iOS 6 kind of thing, because now they'll get more stuff integrated into it, like Facebook and what was it? They were going to do some API changes for Game Center, I think. Mm-hmm. So we might see something like coming into fruition relatively soon, as long as iOS 6 just gets released.
That'd be quite cool. And it might tie into the Maps thing as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
I had another idea for an application I'd like to see built as well, which is just one. All it does is you fire up and it gives you Gloria Estefan's phone number. Simple, but it's that kind of Apple-like simplicity.
It's a useful thing to have on hand, I have to say.
Be in Helvetica.
Oh, white background, black text,
Helvetica. That would sell.
I'm there already. I've just written her number, as I imagine it to be, on my phone marker pen for now.
I'm thinking $17.99.
The year?
No, the price on the App Store.
Yeah, I think that's a good price point.
It would be a rotary dialer as well if Apple made that application.
I've always thought of myself as a rotary dialer.
With a nice mahogany table in the background.
Oh, we have a show title.
I think Gloria Estefan is definitely a fan of skewer morphs.
Yeah, very good. Okay, Ian, what's your idea?
I don't know if you've ever come across it, guys, but you can actually download like a Tesco club card app for your phone. The idea is that when you go to the supermarket and you're checking out your shopping, you load up the app and then you turn it over and you scan the barcode on the app. And to me, that's like the stupidest thing ever. But imagine if something could do that and it wasn't just a Tesco app and you could take it around with you and it could like ping terminals in coffee shops and supermarkets and places you were, and it could like download your receipts so you don't get these stupid pieces of paper coming out of the machines at you all the time. So it can, you know, just deal with coffee shops or supermarkets or whatever else. Maybe you can build up loyalty points. You can get a free coffee every 10 coffees you buy. But something that takes all the work out of being loyal to your favorite places. Not that Tesco is one of my favorite places, but I have other places I like. But I would love it to have something, be really easy for businesses to kind of integrate with, that they wouldn't have to do a lot of work. They could just kind of apply to Apple and say, hey, I want to be part of this scheme. And then they get like a terminal that plugs into their till, and all of a sudden, everyone who's got an iPhone that's got the app starts accruing loyalty points through this scheme.
Do you think that could plug onto the back of Passbook or whatever it's called?
Is that not what Passbook offers? I mean,
Passbook seems to be more about... it's less about the real world interaction stuff. It's not dealing with somebody else's terminal in the same way. It's kind of, it keeps all your stuff, but it seems to be also much more focused at big brands, which obviously Apple is much more about. But you know, I want this to be easy for like the independent coffee shop or record store on the corner to get into.
I wonder if, sorry, you go first. No, I'll go first then. I wonder if you might see more of that when you're talking about, you know, the terminal at the point of sale. I wonder if we might, if there does end up being a proper mobile payment thing in a future iPhone, and I called it RFID the other week, but RFC, isn't it? NFC. Tell me, what is it?
Near field communication.
Nobody's exactly. Fighting champion.
Do you think it might be, once they've got that in place, that kind of thing would be easier to actually make happen?
Possibly, but you still need to have the support in the terminals and the shops and things. So,
but that's coming. I mean, for example, I don't know, I'm going to guess something. Greg's already has it. Greg's has the little device over the till that you can swipe your NFC device over, like Barclay card and things like that.
Well, I've been to Greg's 10 times that it could automatically phone a joiner to have the doors and
I'm really serious about getting rid of receipts, though. I was paying for my shopping in Tesco the other day, and I suddenly thought, I'm swiping my club card here, so they know who I am and they know what I'm buying. So why are they giving me a bit of paper to remind me of what I've just bought when they could put that in a database somewhere and I could check it anytime I wanted to? I don't want this paper thing. I don't have a choice of not getting the receipt when I buy my shopping. But it just lives in my wallet for a week, and then it goes into a big pile of receipts, and then eventually it goes into the recycling, and I never look at them. So why do I have them?
Well, even if you ask not to have the receipt, it's already printed, isn't it? So they just put it in the bin.
Well, but this is the thing, because you swipe your club card before they print the receipt. So,
do you? Okay.
Yeah, why can't they just go, oh, we know who you are. Do you want a receipt? Yes, no, otherwise we'll put it on your account. Fine. They don't want to expose your data to you. They want to keep your data in their databases, but they don't want to give you access to it, because that's more hassle.
The swine.
My one is a very simple thing, and And I think that if this, then that should be able to do it, but I couldn't find a way, and frankly, I couldn't really be bothered to look into it. But I want a way of taking a Twitter favorite and automatically adding it to a Google Doc. So if I favorite a tweet, it automatically sticks that tweet into a Google Doc, be it a spreadsheet or a document or whatever, for future reference. Now, the reason for this is, and it may be better explaining why I need this first before we kind of go into it too much detail, is for creating show notes for this show and the other two shows, the web show mm-hmm. and the gamer show, I quite often look through the latest news articles in Flipboard, and it'd be great to just hit the favorite button at the bottom and automatically it adds into the Google Doc for that week's show.
Oh, that's quite good. Could you not... I'm thinking out loud by thinking and talking here, but could you not do it? I mean, if it doesn't have to be Google Docs, could you, I think some of the Twitter clients have Instapaper integration, so you could add the tweets to Instapaper and then you could just have a list of them in there.
Yeah, that's a possibility. I think the problem is then they're all still separate little things and I kind of just want them all aggregated together. But I think you probably could do it with some kind of hacking of if this, then that. But yeah, if anybody out there happens to know a quick and easy way that I can do this, then superb. But otherwise, could somebody make it for me? Because that would be awesome.
I don't think it would be an app though, Paul.
It wouldn't be an app, but I decided to use this arena for my own personal gain. So
fine, you just do that. It's your show. See if we can.
Okay, okay. Picks. We're going to have to do this one quite quickly because we had tons of time left, but that one lasted a little bit longer than expected. But I think it was worthwhile. So start with Robert. What's your pick for this evening?
Oh, I have an oldie but a goodie. Airphones, which apparently now is free. Cost money back in yonks ago when I bought it. Basically, transmit the sounds from your computer, because it supports both Windows and Mac, over the Wi-Fi to your iOS device, and you can use it kind of as wireless headphones, more or less. Simple job, kind of useful if you have something playing on your Mac or other PC and just wanted to listen to it while you're running around in the kitchen or trying to change a diaper like I often do.
Awesome. So that's earphones and it's free. So next one, Ian, what have you got for us?
I have an app this week, Paul, called Perspective, which is free on the App Store. I'm afraid this is more numbers. This app was partly developed through Asimco and Horace Digue, and it's an app for visually illustrating stories, quite often using graphs. But it's hard to explain what it does, but it's well worth kind of downloading and playing with. It's just a really nice way to present things. So check it out.
Does it do Venn diagrams?
I don't believe it does.
Well, it's of no use to me.
I can make them with my hands, though.
Venn diagrams.
Yes, I just make little circles with my finger and thumb and I overlap them.
Oh, that's quite good. And then do you look through them at people like a sort of scary owl?
Yes, and I say, you know, you're in this overlap between my left eye and my right eye.
Roddy,
you're in the intersection of my left and right eye set vision.
You shoot, Paul. We're going to see this through to its logical conclusion.
Yes. Roddy, what is your pick this evening?
My pick today, and it's an app that's been around for a little while, but it's just gained some new functionality, is the My Xbox Live application on the App Store from everyone's favourites, Microsoft. And what it has done previously is you would be able to sign in with your Xbox Live account and you could see your avatar and do a couple of minor things with it, change your status. You could see which of your friends were online and what they were playing. But it's beefed up quite a bit in its most recent release. Now you can actually have a neat little thing, which was hidden in settings, I think, but you can actually bring up a controller so that if you've connected your iPhone or, I believe, iPad to your Xbox, and it tells you how to do that. You have to go to a menu in the Xbox, synchronizes them, and then you can use controls. So it's got little buttons, not really for playing games, but more for just navigating through all the menus. And it's got quite a nice... You can actually browse through some of the categories and some of the content now on your phone, which I thought was rather cool. I mean, I'll only use it now and then, but those times when you've switched to your Xbox is on, but your controller is somewhere else, you can actually just pick it up and flick through it. Rather neat and free.
Very cool.
I'm going to give that one a go, I think. Sounds good.
Mm, could I just mention on the side of that as well that, because I'm quite keen on seeing who's on Xbox Live, when I'm not on my Xbox, because I will quite often wait until somebody's on and playing something and then go and switch it on to play with them. So I've got that app on my phone. I can look up and see if anyone's on that I can play with. But also, there's an app for OS X called Friends with a Z, and it's free as well, and it lets you see your contacts list and what they're playing, which is rather handy.
That one that I told you about, huh?
Yes, you did. So thanks, Ian. You're great.
I'm not as good as Gloria Estefan, though. To my eternal shame.
But maybe okay, if you had an outfit
finally,
or something.
Just to try and wrap this up today. my pick is a weather app. It's highly entertaining, but it is not an app that you download from the App Store. It's actually a web-based app, and it's called Sun. So if you open up Safari on your iOS device, I think it works best on iPhone, and just go to pattern, so pattern.dk/sun, and then save it to the home screen, and you get a beautiful, beautiful HTML5 weather application. And it's just amazing how this has been put together. The interactions and the user interface, and this is just beautiful considering that it's completely done in HTML5. So I'd highly recommend heading over that. So it's pattern.dk/sun. Save it on your home screen, and it's a beautiful little weather app. And you can save up to 4 locations. I seem to remember off the top of my head. So here and where maybe you work, if you work in a different city and a different country where you're going on your holidays, for example. It's lovely. And it's got lovely colours as well. And that's free because it's just a web app.
I'm just waiting for that one, the Dark Sky app that's available in the US App Store, if we have any US listeners. And it uses, I think it plugs into Doppler radar services, so it can actually tell you, you know, it's going to rain where you are in 23 minutes. It's very cool.
Down to like 2 minutes. It's like, stay inside now. Yeah.
It's remarkable, but because it uses the US's Doppler radar network, it's not yet working anywhere else.
Ah. Well, this app is just beautiful. It doesn't give that kind of detail, but that's irrelevant because it's beautiful.
And just remind me of the URL for that.
It's pattern.dk, mm-hmm. as in pattern.dk. I didn't mean that.
Thanks for that.
/sun. Yes, and then save it on your home screen. It's lovely. Okay. I think that's us for this evening. I don't think we'll get anything else to cover. So you can contact us by emailing britishtechnetwork@gmail.com or follow the network on Twitter @BritishTechNews. If you want to send anything into Trouble Gusset, please email it into britishtechnetwork@gmail.com or tweet any of us directly. You can get us on Twitter. I am Paul Wheatley. That's Paul, WHEATLEY. Roddy, where can they find you?
I'm on Twitter, RODTI. I'm very sweary, so just caveat emptor.
Ian, where can we find you?
Also on the Twitter, I go by Maniac Yak, which is MANIACYAK.
And Robert, where can we find you?
Yeah, and you can even find me on Twitter, at Streak Machine, all in one word. And I'm extremely random, so no, caveat emptor that.
But most importantly, if you've liked what you've heard and you want to give us a review, please head on over to iTunes, give us some stars and a lovely message. We will be forever grateful. We will more than likely read them out, and ratings really, really help us get the charts, so that would be awesome. So that's it for the iOS show. I bid you adieu, and I will see you in 2 weeks. Good night.
Don't go changing.